You're listening. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sound like a broken record, but you are listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Listen sponsored. Now, become a member now. Become a member not only because everything you hear is straight, everything you hear is the late, everything here is great, but we also want you to become a member because we want you to get in there and put your shoulders next to the wall like we're doing. Help pay some of them electric bills, some of our toilet papers, our napkins, our portable plates, portable knives and forks. But better than that, even for the staff, the guys are working hard here at KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And this is Screaming Jay Hawkins telling you why you got to do it. You got to do it not because it's an order, not because it's mandatory, not because it's a must, but it's because this is the only place where you're hearing the right stuff. You're hearing the truth, you're hearing the good sound, and you're digging people who knows what it's all about. So pick up on a few things and lay down some of them other things and just dig KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And remember, I said so. I, Screaming Jay Hawkins. I ain't walking, I'm talking. I'm squawking. Become a member now. Become a member of KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. I'm about to sign off. Bye, 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 bye. Bye.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Dr. Zom Stereo Obscura. Offbeat sounds for talented listeners. Broadcasts every other Wednesday at 10 p.m.
De nuevo, esta música divina.
There was heaven and there was earth.
Después de esa pieza, vamos a escuchar una comunicación.
That's Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura, every other Wednesday from 10 to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
One, two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
This is M1 from Dead Press.
Hey, what's up? This is Boots from the Coup.
Nah, I mean, telling you to stay tuned to Hard Knock Radio.
Keep it locked.
On the move, this is Pam Africa on Hard Knock Radio, the station of resistance.
What's up, folks? This is your girl Femi representing the whole Bay Area. I'm here on Hard Knock Radio.
This is SJ Miyoshiro, old school graffiti writer. And when I'm not, I'm listening to Hard Knock Radio.
another name we'll never know. Taken in the quiet where the broken hearts go. She's just a child, a stolen dream. Her innocence sold unseen. But we can't stay silent, we can't turn away. For every tear that falls, for every plea unheard, we gotta uplift our voices. We gotta boldly step forward, we gotta make sure she's heard. Lost in the cold. We've got to rise, we've got to fight. Shine the light in the darkest night. In this pain and the cries, no more children's stolen lives. The streets whisper the stories of hands that were forced to bleed. Innocence turned to silence by the ones driven by greed. This goes beyond Weinstein, R. Kelly, Epstein, Diddy, and horrific predators. It's a system that preys.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. I wanted to talk to our guest, Nola Brantley, from Nola Brantley Speaks. Because with everything that's going on, a lot of political turmoil, a lot of headlines in the news about this, that, and the other, one of the things that is not being spoken about is the plight of Black girls, missing Black girls in particular. What really prompted this conversation was seeing a couple of videos online. One showed a sister that was lying out in the middle of the street. Cars were driving by. People were walking over her. Nobody knew what really happened to her. Somebody said that she might have had a seizure, but it wasn't quite clear. Of course, our local news outlets didn't cover it. They covered everything else but. And then there was a second video that kind of made the rounds, and it showed a young sister being hit and tossed in a car, and the word was that she got kidnapped. What is happening with Black girls is atrocious in terms of them being vulnerable and not a whole lot of fanfare being made about what is going on. Nola Brantley has been in the forefront of addressing this issue with her organization, Nola Brantley Speaks, and I wanted to get you on the line this afternoon to maybe update us and remind people that, as I said, in spite of everything that's going on, this is still an issue and it's one that we should be paying attention. So welcome to the show. And, you know, how have you been seeing things this past few weeks?
Not good, you know, like the rest of us. I mean, as you said, we are facing a national crisis. You know, at the federal level, people are being discouraged from even saying words like advocacy, which is what we're on here doing. You know what I mean? And the situation is looking really bleak. You know, since we talked last time, and that was about a year or so ago about this same topic, I cannot say that things have gotten better in terms of the number of Black girls we see either being harmed or missing, or better in terms of the response when it comes to, you know, the media or law enforcement, or even in some regards, the community.
You mentioned about some of the things that are happening on the federal level. And with all the cuts that's going on, with all the pullback and talk about no more DEI and no more safety net, how is that directly impacting the work that you and others are doing?
Oh, it's definitely impacting the work. You know, for many agencies that offer support services to victims of trafficking, domestic violence, LGBTQ plus individuals who are extremely at risk, those services are being defunded. And wow. Not only on the service delivery level, but also on the education level. So those of us who educate people on those type of issues, those services are also being defunded.
Is there any sort of path that you see to kind of repair that? You mentioned the lack of advocacy. And I think there's a lot of frustration because as we see all this dismantling, we're asking, where are the Democrats? Where's the machine?
Well, I'm not asking that.
Well, I know, maybe not you, but a lot of people are. And they have resources. And so it is a question to ask, like, where are they? But
well, I mean, but they've been had resources and things like poverty and, you know, disparities for so many different marginalized communities has persisted, you know, even under the leadership of Democratic, you know, leaders. We have not made any, you know, bold or drastic moves to create equality or to provide reparations for ethnic groups who are struggling and being victimized and coming up missing disproportionately due to patterns of trauma that are connected to historical oppression and colonization and the continuance of that through things like structural racism, prejudices. We can't even say racism no more at a federal level. They're discouraged from even using the word racism at all.
Right. If that's the case in terms of them being absent, along with what you just described, is there a path to kind of turning things around? What if you know, you're talking to a lot of people, what would be some steps that you ask them to immediately start doing?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think us waiting for the police or the government was ever gonna be our solution. You know, that could be some resources that we can use to try to solve the problems in our community, but I think the solutions are gonna happen at a local level. You know, I think the solutions for communities becoming safer for children and especially, you know, Black communities for Black children, it's gonna happen at a local level. So, you know, in the city of Oakland, for example, there were efforts that had begun over a year ago that I think kind of faded off because people have a lot of things pulling at them. And sometimes people don't understand maybe the power of what community needs to do when they start to rely on, well, let's, you know, have town halls and meetings that hold maybe like the government accountable, law enforcement accountable, as they should. But I think we've learned by now that cavalry is not coming. And I've said that before here on your show. And so we, as a community, have to come together. We were doing outreach to educate about the danger. We had plans to do things like educate parents about the internet and social media dangers, to distribute air tags for younger children. So if they do get snatched, we can track them. We talked about creating priority classes throughout the city for self-defense classes for women and Black girls and for girls and women in general so that they could be more aware as well as more equipped to defend themselves, at least to get away in the case that these things are happening, you know? And so there's a lot of different actions that we can take as a community, but we have to come together. You know, we got together initially, there was like 100 community members, you know, that included, you know, organizations and just private community members. And about 2 months or 3 months down the road, there were 5 people there with me and 3 of them were teenagers. So we have to stay in it, not just when there's an emergency meeting, not just when it hits the media. We got to be in it for the long haul. We got to be in it in a sustainable way, you know what I mean? So we can really make an impact. And that's where I see us needing the community and us needing to come together and strengthen ourselves.
One of the challenges that I think faces us is the constant doom and gloom narrative. And yes. What I mean by that is, I mean, us in the city of Oakland, we're bombarded with that. But I think also the depiction of Black women, Black girls, is one in which it's constantly being demonized. Social media, which many people are on, and you talked about the dangers of that, have not pulled back, have not put up any walls, have allowed video after video after video of showing our sisters in the most unfavorable light, to the point that when tragedy strikes, it's almost entertaining. I'll give you an example. There's a viral video of some girl that is being knocked out by a man, by a teenager, I mean, a fellow classmate in Los Angeles. Principal has disappeared. Parents can't get a hold of nobody. But this is going around, and the attitude was like, well, maybe she deserved it. What did she do? And this isn't kids saying this. These are adults. These are people that should know better. These are people that I saw sitting at the debate the other night asking, well, what did she do?
And well, that's the thing, Davey D. Victimhood in America is racially coded. When Black girls reach about the age of 12, our society at that age begins to blame them for their own victimization. And that's real convenient since it started back in the days of slavery. That's real convenient that just as they approach the age of puberty, they are starting to be blamed for their own victimization in an environment where they were regularly being raped and used. And so it's not surprising, you know, in American society, Black women and girls and them not being protected and them being harmed, it's historical. It's been happening since the days that we hit these shores. And it's never stopped. And it has very slightly improved or just kind of manifested in different ways and in ways sometimes that are even more harmful to us as a people. Like the complete sexualization, objectification, and I would say even kind of like looking at Black women and girls as animals, oftentimes in the media, you know, in music, something that no other culture does.
Real talk right there. I'm thinking here.
And I think with the violence, like it's not just with Black women and girls. I want to kind of take a step back and say violence against women and girls around the world
is normalized.
Oh, it's so normalized. I mean, in America, we see the least of it compared to what women and girls may see in other places across the globe, but we certainly see it here too. You know what I mean? So that kind of violence is normalized, unfortunately. You know, a woman could be getting, yes, absolutely beat in the street with nobody intervening and people walking by and sometimes people laughing, 1,000%. I've seen it on many occasions. And then now we know that violence against women and girls in general is normalized. Now remember, a Black woman or girl represents the bottom of the pool when it comes to what someone represents as a woman or femininity. A white woman represents femininity and womanhood to America and deserves protection. A Black woman is at the bottom of that. So it doesn't surprise me that when they're experiencing violence, there's even more of an attitude of ignoring it, they deserve it, or kind of it's expected that this would happen to them. So it's not really a big deal.
If you're just tuning in, that's the voice of Nola Brantley talking about the plight of missing Black girls and the challenges that many girls in general are facing. Nola, what would you say and what do you say to some of the young girls that you come across? You know, I have a daughter who's 14, you know, the neighbor's daughter is 12. What do you say to them? What should we be saying to them to maybe put them in a different position to succeed and not, you know, not get caught up into something that is dreadful? I think, and when I say that, I think we think of the extremes. We think of people being out on the corner, but I think it starts with some of the little things.
Unhealthy relationships.
Yeah, it starts go ahead.
I mean, there's definitely like specific education we want to make sure they have starting as early as 10 years old about a healthy versus an unhealthy relationship, what sex trafficking is, and the tactics that traffickers use, what it sounds like, what it looks like, some examples of it so that they understand it. You know, there's, you know, boundaries, what a healthy boundary is versus an unhealthy boundary. You know, there's definitely some general things we want to make sure they know, you know, as they're growing up and developing. But more importantly, and kind of more broadly and generally speaking, the most important thing is having a good relationship with them and not thinking just because you're the adult, you're in control. Cause like literally you're not. You're only in control when you can see them. They're not in your face all the time. They go to school where they're around other people. They go online where they're around billions of people. and you're not always there over their shoulder every minute. So that being said, you have to have a relationship with young people rooted in trust, rooted in love, that's non-judgmental, and that really recognizes and honors that everybody, even a child, possesses a degree of autonomy. Like, for goodness sakes, some folks just try to control kids till the day they turn 18 and then think that's a good strategy. And a lot of bad things happen in that environment because kids do a lot of stuff that adults don't know about when they feel like they can't talk to adults. You know, when kids can talk to adults, they will talk to adults. Even with just take sexual activity, for example. Research shows that like the number one, you know, protective factor in kids not having sex too early is being able to talk to their parents or caregivers about sex. Boom. You know what I mean? But kids aren't going to talk to parents and caregivers about sex if we're judgmental, if we're closed-minded, if we're acting perfect, like we haven't made mistakes of our own in life, if we're overreacting when they make mistakes and acting like it's the end of the world, and if we're not accepting the fact that they might have some decisions that are different than ours, especially as they hit 14 through 18. They might want to do some stuff that we don't want them to do. And if we know they're going to do those things, we have to be realistic and help them practice harm reduction, which means doing the things we don't want them to do in the safest way possible to reduce any negative consequences.
I'm glad you framed it this way and you're laying it out. One of the challenges that we have is that us as adults have got to change. And if there's a big debate that I see going on, and I see this with a lot of men, they'll put out and they'll say some things like, we need these women to start dressing properly because when I was growing up, we didn't do this. And I'm sick of these videos with the Megans and what have you. And so there's this type of I'm trying to figure out the word. To me, it adds up to control, and it adds up to some sort of puritanical type of ideology.
Or one-sided.
Yeah, that's being put down. You know, like these women need to put their clothes on, and then we won't have these problems. And you're saying to yourself, these are coming from people with degrees and people who should know better. But that has really been a line in the sand, which I think contributes, from my observation, to us blaming, you know, young girls for whatever things happen to them versus really doing a different type of dance, which you laid out. That seems very hard for a lot of people who are adults to kind of get into and to let go of a particular mindset, which is often rooted in, when I was your age, I never did this sort of thing. Well, when you were their age, that was the 90s.
That's not even always the truth. Yeah. Some people really are, you know, ignorant, which just means they don't know, and they grew up in a bubble. And because they grew up in a bubble, they have an opinion that's uninformed of other people's experiences. I mean, I have a daughter I raised in the suburbs her whole life, and if I wasn't her mother and didn't do the kind of work I do, she can quite possibly be that person. And in some moments, she dips into that, or dips her toe in there, and I gotta bring her back home and remind her that people are doing things for certain reasons. And even in certain moments, she'll say, I understand, Mom, they're doing A, B, C, and D because they're in poverty. But why do I have to pay for that? You know what I mean? So she still has some opinions sometimes that may be different than mine because she did grow up in a more privileged lifestyle. So there's those people. And then there's people that haven't dealt with their own stuff. So maybe they were sexually abused or trafficked even in their life, maybe not in the same way, but in a way that could have been, you know, manifested in their life in a different way based on who they are and what their socioeconomic status was and what their background was. And they haven't dealt with that. A lot of folks have not dealt with their stuff, and it's hard to, you know, have any compassion or empathy for somebody outside of you if you haven't been able to have that compassion or empathy for yourself. You know, and I suppose there's people that just don't care, that they do know people's life circumstances, you know what I mean? And they don't have their own similar issues, but just are uncaring people. And that's unfortunate, but I don't think that's the majority of people. I think the majority of people truly don't understand the experience of people on the other side of their experience. And I know this because I've trained like half a million people over the last decade, and I worked in the field, and I just see the shock and horror. Like, just recently I did a training for Mount Diablo Unified School District. Mm. And as I was talking about child sex trafficking and sharing different stories, I had to draw back. I could see how traumatized the audience was, and multiple social workers in the crowd were crying because it is horrific. And if you're not exposed to it every day, like maybe folks in Alameda County, like in the Oakland Unified School District, you know, it could be really hard to hear and hard to manage. So, you know, some people don't know about it and they're shocked to hear that it happens.
You know, one of the things that I was also looking at is predators have adjusted. They've adjusted with the technology. They've adjusted with the laws of the land. They've come at a different angle. Can you talk a little bit about what we should be paying attention to, especially as you said, you know, folks are online. And let me just kind of contextualize it this way. When I was coming up, we all had to listen to the same thing at the same time. If we were in the car, you know, our parents had the radio on and we all heard it, right? When we came home, there was only one TV. We all had to watch it. Now everybody has their own customized, you know, apparatus. My daughter has her, you know, phone, and her phone connects her to the world. And you can't be there 24/7. You can put protections on, and they figure out how to get around that. And so what I'm concerned about, and I think a lot of people should be concerned, is that how people may approach her could be very different. I mean, they're playing video games and people are showing up on the video games and you're thinking it's a 10-year-old from next door and it's a grown-ass man from around the block.
Well, that's why we have to, that's why one of the things we that was on our list in Oakland that we didn't get to was educating parents about internet and social media safety and strategies to talk with their children about it and to be able to monitor their children. Because since about 2015, over half the kids that have been sex trafficked met their recruiter or trafficker online, on the internet, on a social media site, on a video game, on a chat room, somewhere on a dating app, somewhere online. So we have to be talking to parents, caregivers, teachers, other adults that are supervising children, and the children themselves from a very early age about internet and social media safety. Most kids are on one or more social media apps almost constantly throughout the day. Not for a few hours, not for 6 hours, not for 8 hours. I said constantly, according to research. And the amount of time they're spending online has went up by double over the past several years.
That's, you know, become an addiction. So, that's become an addiction.
And their kids. The kids shouldn't have to be the ones thinking all the time, okay, someone's online pretending to be a kid who's a pervert or a kidnapper. They're kids. That's our job as adults to keep reminding them so they don't have to think about it all the time. We keep having conversations with them to remind them, hey, just want you to remember when you're online today that people are not always who they say they are. So if you do end up talking to someone that you don't know, and you know I don't want you to do that, but if you do it, make them get on a video chat. You know, if you meet anybody, which you know I really don't want you to do, meet them in the daytime and bring some friends and make sure it's in a public place. You feel me? We got to talk to kids, and it can't just be a conversation about no and don't do that. It has to be no and don't do that. And if you do, this is the safest way you do it, because we don't want our kids getting kidnapped or being traumatized in a way that they're going to spend the rest of their life recovering from. So it's very important that kids have this information themselves, and that we have the information as safe adults, and that we don't just have this conversation with them once or monthly. We have this conversation with them every time we see them, or daily. And every day it's not like, oh, did you meet a predator online? No, every day we're just saying, hey, how was school? Did you still eat today? How was your online activity? Occasionally we're throwing in there, has anything happened online that concerns you? We're asking questions like, how is your online life different than your in-person life? Like, are you the same person online? as you are in real life? And if so, why or why not? If you post something online and nobody likes it, does that bother you? And if so, tell me about it. You know, we're just trying to find out about their life online, because if we're never talking to them about their online life, then why would they come to us if something happens online that's distressing or concerning? They think we're going to judge them. They think they're going to get in trouble. They think we're going to take their phone away or take their online privileges away, which is what most adults do.
Nola, one of the other things that have impacted Black girls is the suicide rate has gone up and depression has shown up because a lot of people are online. Do you connect that with the work that you're doing? Are those interlocked as far as you're concerned?
Absolutely.
And, you know, and how do we start? I think you gave some great advice on doing that. But for people who might not have kids that they come in contact with day in and day out, what would you ask others to do? What levers of power to people that are listening would you suggest that they start to, you know, tackle and address to make, you know, these spaces more palatable and easier?
Children need one loving, trusting adult that is committed to them and that will stand up for them, whether it's a relative or not. Foster care youth are always in need of support and mentors, and they have programs to mentor foster care youth. The CASA program allows you to be a court-appointed advocate for them, so you can even go in court and advocate on their behalf. There could be children in your church, in your community, even in your family that you notice may be a little bit more vulnerable or at risk, or who've experienced trauma or abuse in the past, which puts them automatically at risk, that you could build a relationship with. Be there for them. Don't judge them. Spend time with them. Support them. Have conversations with them. Spend time with them. Do things they like. Spend time with them. You know what I mean? That's what kids need. They are hungry for connections. I'll never forget this video I saw on CNN. It was with Jada Pinkett Smith and the CNN newscaster, and they had a Black girl on there that was a survivor of sex trafficking and her mentor. And she had wrote a letter to her mentor, and she was on there reading it, telling her mentor how much she changed her life and, you know, how much better off she was for having this mentorship. At the end of the video, the mentor gets up to hug the girl. And when they hug, the girl says this to the mentor: "Thank you for that hug. I needed that so bad. I haven't been hugged in so long." And this child was like a 15-year-old, and that broke my heart. And I said to myself, I'm glad she has the mentor. It sounds like you have a great relationship, but in my eyes, she is still completely vulnerable to sex trafficking if she's 15 and she's walking around desperate for a hug from someone that's safe and appropriate.
Wow.
So love children. Love children. Stop trying to control them, judging them, criticizing them, and love them.
Would you say that loving also includes advocating to make sure they're not defunded? That
absolutely,
we should be having, you know, all our pitchforks out, our proverbial pitchforks, and mad as hell, like we're sitting back here going, well, they defunded Department of Education and they defunded this. And I know that government is not the cavalry, but damn it, it's our tax dollars. And if you're going to be rerouting it, you know, at least reroute it to programs like yours and others, you know, so that we can get some things done and not, you know, reroute it to military or some other punitive force. But with that being said, and I'm sorry, I'm losing my voice.
It's okay.
What should we be saying to other adults? What type of conversation should we be having, especially with those adults that are still kind of puritanical in their mindset and, you know, and just maybe have a streak of ignorance, or maybe, you know, they like to oversimplify, but that seems to be a dance that's the very least that we should be able to do at this point in time.
Well, yeah, and what I have experienced in my past in dealing with people like that, including people in government, in community, and in the private sector, was I had to be patient and I had to educate them. Some people I had to educate for years before they shifted. I think about my relationship with the previous district attorney, Nancy O'Malley. I mean, it took a lot of years of educating that woman before I feel like she was really an advocate in the way that, you know, I thought really benefited the girls, you know, for a period of time. But it took a long time. I mean, I remember some of those initial meetings and then advocating over the years and then like being like, eventually being like, wow, she's an advocate for these kids right now. As for before, I was advocating for her to kind of see things from the victim of their, from the perspective of them being victims. And I can say that for other agencies too, who I had to educate for years, who later on became some of the strongest advocates and are still working on behalf of this population. So, you know, we all have our views and opinions and perspectives. They come from our culture. They come from our family upbringing. They come from our knowledge. And so oftentimes people have to be educated, not just once, but many times before they have a true understanding that allows their perspective to shift in a way that I think what we want them to do is contribute in some way, you know, to making a positive change, which people aren't able to do if they don't truly believe, you know, in what it is that's being presented to them. And I think for some people, they believe folks are lazy. They believe folks don't want to work. They believe, you know, they really believe these things because they don't teach true history in American schools. And now it will be even less because you can't even say words like diversity federally now. And those kind of words have to be erased from all federally funded literature. Are already in my field of human trafficking, things are being erased. Like, for example, you know, there's a lot of survivors that have contributed to the field. Documents on federal websites where survivors have given their life experience to advise things are being removed. They're already gone. You know what I mean? So it's going to be important that we do what we can, even in spite of all the things that are happening around us. It's going to be even more important, really.
As do we push to make sure the state fills that void, or is it just a one and done thing?
Well, I think we're working at many different levels. You know, I think we have people at the level, the federal level, the state level, you know, the county level, the city level, that are all being champions for us. You know, maybe it ain't enough people, and you know, the folks we're up against are in higher number. But I think, you know, there are people that are trying to fight against everything that's happening right now.
Nola, the other change, and I don't know if it's a change, but one of the things that I've seen is that it's not always an adult that is going to at least start this initial contact to move people in a wayward direction, if you will. A lot of times kids are used. You know, it might be, you know, a classmate or a peer. How do we start to, you know, even understand how kids are being used as, you know, seeds of attraction, which, you know, it can happen under our very noses.
Call it peer recruitment. And we want to understand it through a trauma-informed lens. So this is how we want to think. If a kid is recruiting another kid into sex trafficking or another inappropriate behavior, isn't there a great chance that kid has been through something or is currently in a set of circumstances that are either unhealthy or traumatic? I'll give you the answer, yes. You feel me? And so that being said, we recognize that although the behavior that's being displayed by that kid might be a very negative behavior, there's a very high chance that that kid was either previously or is currently a victim. You know how many kids I've met that were recruiting other kids that were also currently being a victim and were recruiting under threat and violence and promises for their own freedom?
Right.
And then there are some kids that recruit because they're desperate for love and they get more love and attention, or they're desperate for a night off or to have a lower quota. But I've rarely met a kid that's like, I'm recruiting because I have malicious intent and I want to harm my peers. And I've rarely met a kid that's recruiting that understands trauma, let alone their trauma, let alone the trauma they can cause somebody else by bringing them into the commercial sex industry. It's the adults that are responsible, not these children. That's disgusting.
Nola, we appreciate you taking time out this afternoon and, you know, shedding some light, reminding us what we should be thinking about and doing. And as you said, it's been a while since we've had you on, so we'll have to make a public commitment to have you on more often, to, you know, to keep us updated and to remind us of what is going on. With that being said, what would you ask us to do, people that are listening? Is there anything that you want them to pick up? Is there an event? I think there's something next Wednesday.
For folks in Oakland, yeah, there's something Wednesday. They're having a community town hall for folks in Oakland to, and it's really they're shining light on missing Black girls and women, but they're also addressing other issues that are going on in the city of Oakland. And the organization that is coordinating that is called Atomica Village. They're online, they're easy to find, Atomica Village. And so they are coordinating that town hall effort for anyone in the city of Oakland that would be interested. But for folks more generally speaking, first and foremost, you know, a unified front is needed to bring missing Black children home. So we need to work together, right? So I just want to really amplify that. We need to amplify the voices of missing Black children and families. This is something I have seen an improvement on. Since we talked last, Davey D, I'm so proud of how people have been getting out the flyers for missing Black children. And I have seen multiple kids returned after we have circulated flyers. So I do want to say that. Share their stories, spread awareness, and keep the conversation going. After a kid has been found, go back on your social media and take the flyers down, so those permanent records of these kids aren't floating around. Demand equal attention for every missing child. Media outlets and authorities need to prioritize these cases with the urgency that all kids deserve. If you can, support organizations with time or money that are dedicated to finding missing Black children. Being involved can make a huge difference in bringing kids home. Educate yourself about what we're talking about here today, about disparities in missing children. Advocate for policies that ensure equal treatment and resources. And most of all, stay vigilant in your own communities. Report any information that could help locate missing children and protect them. I really encourage community groups that can watch the community and try to keep the community safe. I just posted something today online to highlight some action steps that I was recommending for the city of Oakland, because they're, you know, facing a very, very challenging time right now. And those action steps were definitely focused around, first and foremost, you know, having those neighborhood groups that can report to each other what's going on, watch out for the kids, keep things safe, have walking routes for kids in communities, and make sure kids are walking in groups, and get kids into safety and self-defense classes. It's not just so that they can learn how to karate chop someone. It's so they can learn about self-awareness when they're out in that community. It could be the difference for many kids between getting kidnapped or staying alive. So those are some things I would definitely say. And also, you know, just really, 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 you know, acknowledge that we're not gonna get the cavalry to come in and save us in our local communities, especially not our Black and Brown communities. We are gonna have to save ourselves and save our children. You know, so if anyone is interested in the efforts in the Bay Area around missing Black children, they can feel free to email me, nola@nolabrantleyspeaks.org. When I have a good group of people together who are committed, we could do some stuff, but not a minute before. Because like I said, I found myself out there with five people and it included a couple of teenagers. We need a committed group of people to actually get things done.
Well, there you have it. Nola at Nola Brantley Speaks. Is it .org, you said?
Yep.
There you have it. We appreciate you taking time out. I hope this resonates with people and we act accordingly. This is a big problem, but it's one that I think we can all solve, especially if we give it the same type of urgency and attention that we have given any number of issues.
Yeah.
And so let's not leave our Black girls behind. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
the night, street lights dim, but our hearts shine bright. No alarms, no sirens rang. Now her name's just lost in the rain.
Lost in the rain.
Where did she go? Who's calling her name? Why does the world just turn away? No headlines, no searchlights glow. Another black girl, where did she go?
We got to find her. Where did she go? We got to find them. We got to find these missing black girls.
They should not be forgotten. These are our pearls. Too many black girls missing. Where did they go? We won't forget, we won't let go. We lift their names, we make them known. Light the sky, let the sirens blow. For every black girl, we won't let go.
Black girls, we love you.
Bilal Sunni Ali joins the ancestors. When he was born on 13th July, 1948, his parents named him William R. Johnson, by father, Robert Lloyd Johnson, and mother, Lois Ethel Johnson. His name would later become Bilal Sunni Ali, and it would long reverberate in the worlds of black radical politics and music. Music moved him as a third grader, where he picked up the clarinet and later the tenor sax and the flute. Apparently, he had a thing for woodwinds. He started a band when he was 12 years old. His first band was named The Symphony. He and his bandmates said their group played music from heaven. This was the same age when he met a man who wrote detective stories. His name, Gil Scott Heron. Gil Scott Heron later found fame as a forerunner of rap, a wonderful poet, and a singer of considerable range and power. A few years later, Sunni Ali and other band members would form the Simba Drummers and Dancers, where they wore dashikis, or African-style garments for men. His fellow bandmates included Eddie Adinola Knowles and Cosmic Charlie Saunders. When Bilal was 22, he joined the famous Midnight Band, which backed Gil Scott-Heron. But he didn't just join bands. As a teenager, he met Lumumba Shakur and Zaid Malik Shakur, and also Sekou Odinga. These were the guys who helped found the Harlem and Bronx chapters of the Black Panther Party in New York. So Bilal Suni Ali wasn't just a talented musician, he was a revolutionary as well. In 1975, he went underground and reportedly worked for Black Freedom and National Independence in the Black Liberation Army. From his earliest to his latest years, he believed that music was a powerful tool of human healing. Sheikh Baba Bilal Kume Ben Suni Ali passed his last breath on December 30th, 2024, surrounded by his many children, his numerous grandchildren, his ex-wives, and his wives. He was surrounded by an ocean of love. Now he plays music with the ancestors, with love, not fear. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
All right, big shout out to Mumia. Big shout out to Davey D and his guest, Nola Brantley. Freeborn Franklin jumping in here to close out Hard Knock Radio. I just wanted to let you all know about the emergency rally to stop the genocide in Gaza that's happening tonight. That's going to be at the Israeli consulate, 6 p.m. at 456 Montgomery Street in San Francisco. Again, this is an emergency rally to stop the genocide in Palestine, to stop the genocide in Gaza. That's tonight, March 18th at 6 p.m. in front of the Israeli consulate at 456 Montgomery Street in San Francisco. And we're going to close out Hard Knock Radio today with Hins Hall 2 from Macklemore.
In our lifetime, we will be free. One day when the light shines, we will be free. In our lifetime, we will be free. And they can bury us, but they will find out we are seeds. Oh. Because I know of every massacre we suffered. The Nakba, Sabra, Shatila, and Rafa. My people have died a million times in the struggle. Still they rise from the tide like a rose through the rubble. I see God himself in the eye of a refugee who'd rather die a martyr than live a life under siege. So if I'm not allowed to say from the river to the sea, then from the Rhine to the sea, Palestine will be free. Still they know they can't shake us. $1 billion sword to the neck. Death cannot break us. And every Palestinian refugee holds a key. One day we will return no matter how long it takes us.
In our lifetime we will be free. One day when the light shines we will be free. In our lifetime we will be free. And they can bury us, but they will find out we are seeds.
Seen that
massacres. I'm grateful to be alive. You appreciate life when you survive a genocide. Look in my eyes and tell me what you see. Ran out of tears to cry right till Palestine is free. Got a problem with a system that doesn't want us existing. Turn a city to a prison that's missing living conditions. My mom's calling, she's telling me she kinda scared. I hear the bombs falling. I smell a death up in the air. My uncle lost his children. I lost my cousins. His tears watered the grave to let him know we still love some. Our schools turn to shelters for the rich and poor. I just pray for peace. When I speak, I don't wish for war. Bodies laying out, ain't nothing to play about. I give my people hope, cause I'm the first who made it out. I'm just walking the path, this is God's plan. Building up my dreams with the rubble I touch with my hands.
ومنكم حرين في حياتنا منكم حرين لو دفنونا نرجع مزهرين.
They done woke up the world now. We know who you serve at the White House. The kids and guys on my bow right now. I'ma ride for your life like you are my child. Long live the resistance if there's something to resist. Had enough of you murdering little kids. PC for a minute, I was trying to be a bridge. But there'll never be freedom by pleading with Zionists. World screaming free Palestine. We see the manual, we know how you colonized. You'd be surprised by how many you actually really don't give. When you take away the power of the almighty dollar sign.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to Cubby Cushy, Cubby Cush, Tuesday nights on KBOO.